Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The phone, they're trying to trade him. They're trying to do the thing. But you got to look at this. You're Farhan. You're looking at this team and saying, who on this roster can I, and am I going to get anything from? Is it Panic? Is it Belt? Is it Posey? His situation is like, he understands a lot of these guys don't have the value, so he's not going to be able to do anything. So when you look at a guy like Madison that has some trade value, will he trade him? The closer it gets toward a deadline, I think there's a lot of teams that are, you look at the Yankees, a lot of teams maybe looking for an ace and understand the rental aspect of this. It may not be a long-term deal, but they're willing to give up something. So I think the closer it gets to this trade deadline and the teams that are saying, hey, we got a chance, I think his value will continue to go up, and I think they'll trade him.
Remember when Linsanity swept New York City? That was what? 7 games when Carmelo Anthony went down. Linsanity stepped in, knocked down a bunch of shots, helped the Knicks win some games, got everybody all gassed up, right? And then Melo came back and Linsanity kind of folded and the Knicks kind of struggled and people blamed Melo and thought Lin should have been the guy and A, B, C, and D. Well, where are we at now? Melo's out of the league. Lin's a nice backup role player somewhere, but he doesn't do a whole lot. He was with Toronto this past season.
Champion.
So he just won a ring. Yeah, he just won a ring. I don't know if he played. Did he play a single second in any of that series?
Yeah, he did.
You saw him out there?
Yeah, garbage time. He got not as many minutes as McCaw, but he got some touches.
Point being, that was a really small sample size, but it was a fun sample size. And that's what's happening with the Giants right now. Because long-term, Carmelo Anthony, as much as you can criticize him, and I'm at the forefront of that list with him taking that super long two-pointer that shouldn't even exist in the NBA anymore, he's still the better player, all right? Don't get caught up by a small sample. This 8-2 run over the last 10, it's fantastic. And if you go back to the beginning of June 1st, since then the Giants are 21-15 with a plus 26 run differential. That's a winning percentage of .583. If they had done that all season, they'd have the third best record in the National League right now. But we're only talking about 22% of the season. This is why fans don't run ball clubs, because fans now would probably be saying, give Bumgarner the contract, let's go out and buy, let's make a run at this. It's not the right plan. And I can't say I envy Farhan Zaidi's position right now, because the fan base is going to be very excited about possibly going out and buying. He needs to stick with the plan, which is selling. I'm going to give you another sample size. This is the Carmelo side of the equation versus the Jeremy Lin side of the equation, which was, what, 7 games with the Knicks during Linsanity. This is a 488-game sample that goes back to the second half of the 2016 season. 2016, at the break, the Giants had a 6.5-game lead in the NL West. They're the best team in baseball. Second half of the season, they were the worst team in baseball. Still got to the playoffs, beat the Mets in the wild card game, then went on to lose to the Cubs in 4 in the next round. Right? They had that disastrous 9th inning. It was the end of an era. Javi Lopez, all those guys. Whatever. But the second half of that season until now, the Giants are 210 wins and 278 losses. Okay? That's a sample. That is a true sample of what this team is. And it's a team that's past the World Series window that's struggling. They're not very good. They're having a good run. They are not a good team. It's not meant to get anyone upset. But when you're the general manager and you need to make tough decisions with the deadline in 16 days, you can't get swept up in an 8-2 run over 10 games and say, well, you know what? Maybe Jeremy Lin could be our star. Newsflash, he's not. Maybe he can stick around for a while and come off the bench, but he's not going to be Carmelo Anthony. And even though Melo's not great, you at least knew what you had there, and he was a better player than Jeremy Lin. So the fact of the matter here is, it's not something that's going to get the fan base excited, but you got to deal Bumgarner, you got to deal Smith, you got to stick with the rebuild plan, and then when spots are vacated, bring up some of the young guys. Start giving them reps. Some of these young guys look all right this year.
Yeah, Tyler Beede sure looked good in his start yesterday. And you look at the situation of Madison Bumgarner, it seems like the sentiment around baseball is that the teams that are looking to sell are charging too much money for the players that they want to sell.
You're okay.
Yeah, I thought it was my phone.
It's not our computer. It's a fire truck.
I was ready to throw the flag on somebody, but I think we all survived. I think
shout out the SFFD.
You look at the situation, Joe, and about 5 or 6 days ago, according to FanGraphs, the Giants had a 0.2% chance of making the playoffs. Now you sit here on a Monday morning, and that number has gone up sixfold. It's now 1.2% to make the playoffs. So you go through another week. If you have another good week, maybe you sweep the doubleheader today.
What are you doing?
What I'm doing, Joe.
1.2%.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I'm saying mathematically, like the Orioles, there is a chance.
I'm saying you don't have to be in a fire sale mode. If you're not going to get value for Bumgarner and Will Smith and Sam Dyson, it's okay to hold on to them and wait and see for another week in 10 days. Maybe you win 7 of the next 8, and all of a sudden you're 2 games out in the wild card, and things change. Things can change in a hurry, Joe.
From the 650 on the Chilton Auto Body text line, which you can reach out to us on 95795. Hey, Joe. You suck. Keep talking and keep betting against the Giants. Talk to you when we get the second wild card. It's good to be back. It's good to be back. And I actually bet on them yesterday at plus 155 and won. Now we're still in the negative, but we're coming back.
Right.
Coming back strong.
So,
all right.
So
you got takes?
But
your takes next.
Exactly.
Low takes coming up next. Brian Baldinger at 8:30. The show goes on here on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Sorry to report that I missed throwing to the update in the last segment. I'm rusty. Nice guy Steven not getting his reps and out on vacation this week. So we're gonna do it at 8:58. 8:58, get ready for the greatest update you have ever heard in your entire life. And if it is not the greatest update you have ever heard in your entire life, heads will roll. Because you get an extra, 40 minutes, nice guy, to prepare for this?
About an extra 25, actually, because we went late.
That's also on me. I'll take a 5 on that as well.
Man, we have multiple fouls in the play.
It happens. But now you got the extra prep, so we'll be expecting. I want this to be witty and informative.
You have no idea what I'm cooking up here, man. It's going to be unbelievable.
Hope you can raise the bar from Milwaukee, which was stolen from John Miller in the 7 o'clock. So we'll hopefully we can raise the bar a little higher than that.
I like that. It's from Wayne's World.
Yeah, it's Alice Cooper.
It's quaint.
Isn't it pronounced Milwaukee? Yes, it is, Pete. All right, 8:58. That's where we're looking forward to. Brian Baldinger, former NFL offensive lineman, 95.7 The Game insider. First question out of the gate, should we be worried about the fact that Nick Bosa has not signed yet? He's one of 5 first-rounders who hasn't signed. We will visit with him at 8:30 to talk about that and more. Question of the day from the Take Your Pick poll question brought to you by FH Daily Chevrolet. Topic we were talking about in the last segment, how should the Giants approach the trade deadline? Buy or sell? Lo, you were right on the verge of something, and I had to cut you off before we went to the commercial break.
It wasn't
break.
That important, Joe. It really was.
Is that what it was?
Great tease.
We tricked you. We got you to come back for the take, and there is no take.
Right, exactly.
I'm just kidding.
It was simple. It was just like, hey, you're in a situation where even if you don't make the playoffs, Madison Bumgarner, we know what Madison has brought to this organization. You understand who he is. He's still got, 4 or 5 years, good years left. So even if you don't get that King's ransom, if Posey may be gone, if some guys that you're willing to say, you know what, I'm going to let these contracts just expire and just because I can't move these guys, is he a guy that you look at and say, I know we're rebuilding, but is he a guy that we can just keep on the squad and do a long-term deal with because he has been a part of this culture?
A lot of big questions moving forward for him. They are an entertaining team right now.
Right,
I think before we get caught up in any of the big picture stuff, this has been a fun team to watch.
It has.
Even the loss this weekend on Saturday night, they came back from 4-2 down. They tie it the ninth. They have a chance to win in extra innings. They don't. That happens. You're not going to win them all. But the idea that you put on a Giants game now and you're getting runs, last 10 games, they're 8-2, averaging 7.5 runs per game. It's like, who are these guys? Where's it coming from? Take a look at their splits. Right now, dead split, 46 home, 46 road games. 34 home runs have been hit at Oracle Park by the Giants. They've hit 60 on the road. They scored 156 runs at home, 235 on the road. 20-26 when playing at home. 23-23 on the road. Small sample again, but you start to have those thoughts creep into your mind. These guys appear built to have more success away from a park that's more pitcher and defense friendly than it is hitter friendly. I don't know. Do we have to revisit the idea of the walls and adjusting the dimensions so that maybe we could have some more fun? Do we think about that?
No, we don't think about
that.
I don't like that at all, Joe, because really left field is not a problem. Even center field is not a problem. The problem is in right field. So you talk about moving the fence in. You're not going to be able to move that entire brick edifice in 20 feet. It's already sitting at 309 in right field. So I don't know what the solution is other than deep right center triples alley. So you're going to move that in 20 or 30, 40 feet. The aesthetics of the park, to me, would be hampered. It'd be ruined. Ultimately, it's a batting lineup problem. It's not necessarily a ballpark problem. I don't have the splits in front of me, but I know opposing batters have hit many more home runs at Oracle Park than the Giants have, proving to you, or proving to me anyway, that it's not so much of a ballpark issue, it's a hitter issue.
Paul Goldschmidt used to treat the place like Yankee Stadium.
Right.
It's like he never really had problems planning anything to deep center field. So, all right, we'll keep that in mind moving forward. But they've had a lot of success on the road. Continues today. You got the Rockies. You got the Mets. You've got – who the heck else is on
the
this
Cubs,
schedule? I was looking at it earlier.
The Cubs. Then the Padres. And then your Phillies and then Colorado again. 13 of the next 20 on the
Phillies.
Road. And you're in a situation where – you've got basically 13 or 14 games until the deadline. And so really over the next week, week and a half, you've got the next three series, let's say, at Colorado, home to the Mets, home to the Cubs, 11 games. If you go 5-6 or 4-7, fine, it's over. If you find your way to go 8-3 or 9-2, if you stay hot like you have been, all of a sudden now Farhan Zaidi's got a tougher decision.
Well, those bats been working well. You're going to Colorado. You're at Colorado. So, hey, maybe those bats keep working. You know you can get manufacturers some runs there. But both these teams, you know, that's going to be a nice little matchup. And like you said, you know, go to the, you know, you're versus the Mets. This team there, you're talking about this week being this last couple of days is going to be a very pivotal time for the Giants, whether they sell or buy. I don't think that it's going to have any indication what this team's doing. I really don't. I think that even if they, you know, they come out like you're saying, you're in a situation of saying, is this team going to get better? Is this team going, is this roster going to take us where we need to go? And I think it's hard to say yes. So I think that Farhan still is going to stay the course and do what he needs to do, because if he's looking at this roster, and we know he is, he's saying, I do need to get a better team. And I don't think by him not trading in these assets, I don't think that necessarily they're going to get better for us long term. I know in the short of this, you're saying,
right,
are they going to make a wild card?
Let me just ask you both this then, because we all are expecting that he's going to try to make the team better. Madison Bumgarner, as a pitcher, if you trade him, how long until you get a pitcher of that caliber to come up and be able to take his place? Because I look at Dallas Keuchel, who got a one-year deal in Atlanta for just $22 million, and you look at the prices for starting pitchers starting to come down. Maybe you look at an extension for Madison Bumgarner and you think, maybe we can get him in for 4 years and $90 to $100 million versus trading him, getting some prospects that we don't know whether or not they're going to be quality major leaguers, and what do we do about our spot as an ace? So I ask you both. Trading Madison Bumgarner, we all say you got to trade Bumgarner, you got to trade Dyson, you got to trade Will Smith and get prospects. But as it pertains to Bumgarner, can you find an ace out there who's going to be as good as he's been?
Well, is that necessarily what the trade's going to be for? So I see what you're saying, but if you trade him for three players, one of which is a highly coveted middle infielder, and then you get an up-and-coming pitching prospect and then an up-and-coming relieving prospect, I don't think you necessarily need the starting pitching prospect to be Bumgarner to make it work. If all three come up and play well, it's kind of like the Herschel Walker trade.
Right.
I don't know if any one piece was like, oh my God, but everything the Cowboys got out of that set the stage for what they were going to do throughout the course of the 90s. But you're right. The return on that investment has got to be big. And if you're going to send these guys to the minors for 3 to 4 years, it's going to be a while before we get to know any of them.
And, you know, the additional piece, and I think we talked about this while you were gone, we were looking at the attendance numbers at Oracle Park year over year.
That's important.
And they're down about 7,000 fans per game. And you multiply that by 82 games. Now you're talking about 500,000 fans, I think was the number that we approximated.
Right. I went through that whole thing with the collapse of the Phillies until they started being interesting again. It came out to like $270 million,
right,
reasonably, that you could have estimated they lost in ticket sales, parking, all based on the average cost of a fan going to a game.
Right. So if we take a half million fans that they're going to fall short on this year, they're still going to draw 2.5, 2.6, but that's not the same 3.1 they've been drawing, and you start to cost that out.
Over 5 years.
Right. All of a sudden, paying Madison Bumgarner $100 million over 4 years doesn't seem like such a bad deal. So I know what you're saying about, like, Will Smith, he's not putting butts in the seats, and Sam Dyson and the heavy ball, what a sinker. With apologies, I don't think a lot of people are, you know, driving down to Oracle paying $50 for parking to see Sam Dyson. For me, the real interesting one is Madison Bumgarner. Unless you can really get a king's ransom for him, it might be better off to sign him long term.
It's a train wreck down there these days, by the way. The 4th Street Bridge is under crazy construction, so they blocked it off, and they won't allow 3rd Street to come through because they reroute 4th across the 3rd Street Bridge, and then they reroute 3rd, or excuse me, they reroute 3rd to 4th Street, and then they reroute 4th Street down around this new open roundabout that came up in the neighborhood. Case in point, living down there, a train wreck right now. Train wreck. Traffic backed up everywhere. Can't go anywhere. No one knows where the hell they're going. You got police out there everywhere trying to move people around. Can't do anything.
And don't forget the first Warrior game at Chase Center is about 90 days away, so you want to add that traffic into the traffic you're already experiencing.
I can't have it, Coach. I need a quiet neighborhood. I need a nice, peaceful neighborhood. I'm trying to get Zen down there.
Going to keep you on your bike, that's
yelling,
for sure.
Screaming. Yeah. Keep no you more on bikes. I can't be riding a bike down there. Some lunatic's going to hand me.
You can always move to the meter, Joe. You can always move to the meter.
Yeah. I see Dibs now all of a sudden. Yeah. He was nice and friendly all day, and you now know, he's starting to get angry.
You say that, and then you swivel, and you both look at me waiting for a reaction. I'm not going to give you one. That's the old me. The old me used to react.
Something changed over the All-Star break?
Right. Yesterday, right. I kind of lost my cool at the Marshall.
He just told me some story about flipping out on the golf course.
Yeah. The Marshall.
Listen to this guy.
Unnecessarily sweating me. And
I'm sure that's sweating
us from the start. You guys got to keep up. So finally at the turn, I'm coming off a snowman on the par 4. I made myself a nice little quad bogey. Not in the best of places.
No.
I'm driving to the 10th hole, and as we drive by the marshal, he says, 15 minutes behind, 15 minutes behind. And I said, whatever, dude. Whatever.
You give him whatever.
Kept going. So we get to the 10th tee, and I'm running a little hot coming off a snowman, and this guy's sweating me. He comes up behind us. He's like, hey, I told you, you need to keep up with the group in front of you.
How old is this gentleman?
About 60. 65.
So he's at the tail end here.
So you and him tail end of the tape.
So now I'm hot.
Okay.
Now I'm legit hot. So I turn to him. I go, dude, we're doing the best we can. I am terrible. You can't play fast when you're terrible. It's not possible. You know, I'm in the bushes. Oh, there's my ball. You hack it. You're still in the bushes. You got to find it again. 3-minute search rule.
Yeah.
So we went back and forth, and your boy lost his cool.
3-minute search rule, is that imposed by you?
No, it's the new USGA rules, the new rules of golf. They put in 20 new rules, and they said no longer do you get 5 minutes to find your lost ball. It's now 3. They're trying to speed things up. So when you can't find your ball, you look for 3 minutes, you drop whatever, and you're on to Cincinnati. But when you're terrible, it's going to take you longer than if you're a good golfer.
Why are you out there screaming at the marshal?
Yeah.
It sounds like he's trying to do his job, keep up pace of play, and that you and your group were the problem.
It wasn't necessarily my group. I'll take the blame on me.
So it's just you.
I'll tell you what, though. There's a certain amount of aplomb. When I'm paying $1.25 for a tee time at a nice golf course.
That's not how that works.
That's exactly how that works.
If I pay good money for this golf course, I can do whatever I want. No, that's not how the world works. You pay the money. You abide by the rules. You've been golfing forever. You know what pace of play is. Keep it up.
Joe, there's a
how
certain...
How many drinks you have the night before?
30?
Maybe that was part of the problem.
And actually, it was part of the problem because as we're going
it
back
was
and
the
forth,
problem.
I said to the marshal,
like this guy.
I said, I'm out here. I'm physically ill out here. Trust me, I was physically ill.
I'm not doubting that.
Which doesn't make you play any faster. The idea of customer service is you serve the customer. You're not out there tapping your watch and trying to sweat a paying customer.
But he had already given you a warning.
On the first hole. We hadn't even teed off yet.
Oh, wow. How'd you get a warning on the first hole?
You guys got to keep up with the group in front of you. It's like, dude, I haven't even teed off
so
yet.
So the guy set the stage for a day in which you should play adequate pace, and you were unable to abide by that. And then when he came back to remind you later, you got angry and yelled at him.
My pace wasn't the issue. It was the number of strokes I was taking. That was the issue.
It's just 3-minute rule.
Get out of here, man.
Tibbs, 95.7 The Game. Great to have you with us. A reminder, NFL training camp is less than...
Wow.
I
just can't imagine you blowing up out on the golf course.
Nah, that's the old me. I've turned over a new leaf. So when Lowe corrupts the name of the city of Alameda, It's like water off a duck's back, Joe. I'm not even going to get mad anymore. Go ahead, Joe.
So because it just changed, it's the new you.
New me.
I remember I may or may not have gotten in some minor trouble, alcohol-related, at Penn State.
Oh.
And I had to sit in some alcohol classes as a result of this as part of the punishment. And I remember the guy was going around the room, and he was asking people to fill out this document to talk about, you know, what are you an alcoholic? Are you a problem drinker? Right, right. Are you a recreational drinker, non-drinker? And they give you all the definitions on it, and I filled out the form, and we go through it.
No.
The guy's going through the whole thing, and he's calling out names, and his intent is to put you on blast so you're shamed into possibly not drinking anymore. You're dealing with college kids here.
Right.
And he gets to me, and he's like, just four and ball. Where's four and ball? Oh, this guy says he's a non-drinker. Oh, you're a non-drinker. That's hilarious. How long you not been drinking for? And I was like, I looked at him, I go, 2 days. He goes, 2 days. He thought I was messing with him. He tried to throw me out of the class. I go, no, I'm trying to better myself. I just stopped drinking a couple days ago, so I'm giving you an honest answer. He didn't want to hear it. He was just drilling me.
Really?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't drink that night. I mean, it's not like I stuck to it. But I see what you're saying, Dibs. It's a new me. I turned over the leaf yesterday.
Yes. 2.0, coach.
All right. So NFL training camp less than 2 weeks away. This football season, 95.7 The Game is bringing you the biggest names, including Hall of Famers Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, and Michael Irvin, former 49er head coach Steve Mariucci, NFL Network analyst Brian Baldinger, and more. You're going to hear from all of our NFL insiders this week on 95.7 The Game as we are currently efforting Brian Baldinger to talk to him about Jimmy Garoppolo,
love
the 49ers, all that good stuff. Do your thing. Let me know when you got him. I saw the Melvin Gordon news last week. We were talking about this earlier, the value of the quarterback position, the new collective bargaining agreement coming up. Gordon, you talked about this. If you want to do something for the players during this next collective bargaining agreement, and you're going to try to make a case for what the players need, you know, lifetime health insurance, take care of these guys.
Yep.
Look at the situation this guy's in. They picked up his fifth-year option, so now he's going to put a fifth year of wear and tear on his body. And he's saying going into it, enough. I've proven to be a good player for you guys. I struggled early out of the gate, but I'm playing really well. I want a new deal. Most people are looking at this saying, you know what? Chargers don't need to pay him. They don't need to pay him based on the position. Last year, without Melvin Gordon, the Chargers went 4-0, averaging 27 points per game, which was up from their average. And those four wins, they weren't cupcakes. That was the comeback win in Pittsburgh on that Sunday night. That was the Thursday night comeback win against the Chiefs at Arrowhead. They want some big games. So we'll get back into that in just a bit. But right now, happy to go to the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Connect with your team. Connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video, messages, and meetings across existing devices. Brian Baldinger, former NFL offensive lineman. Check him out now as an NFL analyst for the NFL Network, Fox Sports. He is a 95.7 The Game insider. He's joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Baldy, it is great to have you with us. We're going to jump right into the heavy stuff because that's how we do it around here. How concerned should Niner fans be right now that Nick Bosa is unsigned 11 days from players reporting for training camp?
Well, anytime you're a number one pick and a guy that you're really going to, you know, draft a foundational piece isn't signed, you always worry. But there are days. I mean, they don't start till July 25th. So there's time here. These things, you know, but, you know, if you look at what his brother did in with the Chargers, I mean, he missed an awful lot of time that rookie year, you know, holding out for a variety of reasons. And so you just hope that it's not going to be the same thing as what Joey did. And you hope that it's a different circumstance, different, you know, different team, a different year and all that, and that, you know, John Lynch can get this deal done.
What's the learning curve like in that first camp for a rookie? Is it more critical than ever for a rookie to be able to come into camp as opposed to a veteran who's maybe been around for 8 or 9 years?
Yeah. Yeah, it is, because it's all new, and there's a great deal of, you know, installation that goes on. You know, every day that you miss, you get behind, and it's just hard to catch up. I mean, you're going through every single play, every single against every look, and these are things that you don't get a lot of time to review and rehearse later on in training camp and during the season. And so it's a foundational base of knowledge, and I think it hurts a lot of players. Now, you know, Nick is a pass rusher, get after the quarterback. That's all true. His brother came in and, you know, he had fresh legs and he was instantly, one of the better defensive ends in the league. But I think that it's critical. I just think it's critical to get in there, to get with your teammates, to get working with DeForest and, you know, Eric and, you know, the whole group there and, start building a foundation about what you want to achieve, and I think it starts in the dog days of July and August.
Yeah, Baldy, when you're talking about, you know, the dog days of August and teams starting to gel and, of course, repetition, you got to go over all the plays with one another to get that continuity. Let's talk about the continuity of a position you played, the offensive line. You're talking about McGlinchey out there, you Pettis and Richburg, all those guys that they have to come together. As far as just different scheme, the scoop, the reach block, all those things, how important is it for the cohesiveness of the offensive line?
It's critical. You basically made your living, you know, run behind them and blocking with them. You're like that sixth offensive lineman forever. But
sure.
The good thing is the 49ers are bringing all five starters back from a year ago. And so I think that's encouraging, the fact that they have played together. You know, there's continuity there. But I think there's room. You know, I think there's room to take a step. Aaron Donald ruined the 49ers last year. He just can't be allowed to be that disruptive. We've seen other teams take Aaron Donald out of the game. They can't allow him to just take over games the way he did against Seattle and the 49ers a year ago. Because you won't beat them. I mean, he'll just make too many big plays. It'll be hard to overcome. So, I just think up front, every day you got to, try to get that cohesiveness a little bit better. McGlinchey was a rookie, didn't know anything last year at this time, but he was a really good player last year. And looks like he's going to be a good player long term. And so I think it's just, but it all starts. Any team that's going to be successful and get to the postseason play in January is going to start right up front with those five guys, along with the tight ends and the fullback. And so I think, how they kind of start building the second year of this foundation with that group is really critical to success this year.
95.7 The Game NFL insider Brian Baldinger joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Baldy, which should Niner fans be more concerned about? A, Jimmy Garoppolo's durability, or B, Jimmy Garoppolo's ability to perform at a very high level? Say he's healthy. Can he reach that franchise quarterback level is what I'm getting at.
Well, we don't know. I mean, I'd like to say yes, he can do that. I'd like to answer the question just yes and yes. No and no. Like, there's nothing to worry about. ACL's repair. It's a badge of honor. You haven't really entered the NFL until you get your ACL torn. That's the way I kind of look at it. We all have a scar at some point. Some of us have two. But I think he'll be back and just fine. It was a non-contact injury. These things happen. But I think that, you go back to the end of 2017 and we saw the way he played in those last five games. And that's good. They were out of contention. He put up good numbers. They moved the ball. They scored a lot of points against good teams like Jacksonville. But it's, all that stuff is in the past. This has to be the year that the 49ers compete every week. And I'm not talking about, let's get to eight wins. No, this is a team that has been building for three straight years. The quarterback is the biggest part of it. This is a team that has to go out and win 10 games this year. And if they don't, regardless of what Garoppolo does, it's going to be a major disappointment. And, heads will roll, as they like to say. This is a do-or-die year for Garoppolo and for the 49ers. And so I expect 10 wins from this football team this year. And if that's enough to get to the postseason, well, so be it. But if it isn't, that's where they got to be. They got to get double-digit wins, and the quarterback has to play at a high level in order to do it.
Is part of the expectation, and I love what you're saying, Baldy, about 10 wins. I think that's an incredible mark to set. Is part of that because of new vulnerability in the NFC West? You've got Arizona with a new QB and a new coach. Seattle's been losing piece after piece, and now we see the Rams without Ndamukong Suh and maybe an injured Todd Gurley. Does that make this even more pressure-packed for the Niners, the fact that the division is a little bit more vulnerable?
I see what you're saying, and you might be right in all three counts, although you never count Seattle out.
Sure.
they roared back, although the 49ers beat them at the end of the season, but they were a playoff team last year, and I didn't see them lose a whole lot of pieces. Doug Baldwin wasn't a big factor last year, and he's not going to be there, but Pete Carroll could flat out coach. But I think it's more about the 49ers. They've been adding pieces through the draft, free agency trades now for three straight years. It's time to play. It's time to stop turning the ball over, looking like you're a Pop Warner team at times and they can't hold on to the football. It's time to stop popping the ball loose. I mean, it's just time to put this thing together. I mean, there's just no five-year plans in the NFL. 3 years, it's time to get it done. And they have the talent to do it. I mean, it's not a question of talent or anything else right now. It's a question of just going out there and playing as a team, taking care of the football, and start taking the football away, because those are what good teams do. That's what the Bears do. You know, that's what the better teams in this league do. So that's what the expectation is. It all starts from whatever the final 53 players are, you know, come Labor Day weekend. That's the team that has to do it. It's not about anybody else, because they're capable of beating all the other teams in the conference.
Ball, I couldn't agree with you more. I think this team has a lot of talent and a lot of potential. You were talking about the offensive line, how they gel quarterback, tight end, and running backs. Looks pretty good. Receivers seem to be a question at times, but they got some new talent there. How about defense? When you're talking about defensive line, you look at the guys, you know, Nicky Bosa, you think about DeForest Buckner. Here's a guy that took on a lot of double teams, but now he's got, you know, D Ford, and Nick Bosa should help him. But it's just like the offensive line and those other positions seems pretty solid, the receivers. But now when you look at defense, the defensive front looks pretty good, but the secondary, how much is those guys going to go hand in hand for as far as make the back end better?
Well, look, they've all played, you know. I mean, and Richard Sherman has been a star this league.
Sure.
We'll see what he has left. But they've all played. They all have – a lot of those young guys all got a chance to play last year. You know, I mean, look, Jimmy Ward was a first-round pick. You know, Witherspoon has been around now. Adrian Colbert has played. I mean, they've got experience. It's time to put it together. I mean, it's just time to put it together. It's not a question of, well, this is a weakness, or, you know, they got to overcome this. No, I mean, they kind of line up and play. The scheme is, we know what the scheme is. It's a smart coach. But, you know, it's about making stops. It's about keeping teams out of the end zone and forcing field goals. It's about taking the ball away. I mean, that's what defense is. And so, they've gone through a lot of injuries. We all know that over the years. But it's just time to, you know, stand up right now and say that we belong, and we have more than enough talent. There's less talented teams that made the playoff in the last year in this league than the 49ers do right now. So, yeah, the receivers, they've got some youth there, but I expect Deebo Samuel to be a stud in this league. So I don't know how long it's going to take for him to fit in. Nobody thought at this point last year that, you know, a guy by the name of George Kittle was going to be a star in this league. So who's going to be the star this year? Who's going to step up? You know, George stepped up last year in the second year. Who's going to be that guy this year that's going to step up and all of a sudden the whole league is going to look at and go, wow, who knew that he could be that kind of player?
95.7 The Game NFL insider Brian Baldinger joining us here on 95.7 The Game. News came out over the weekend. The league, Roger Goodell, thinking again about an 18-game regular season. The union pushing back, saying no, they don't see that as in the best interest of their players. Where do you land on that? Do you think we ever get to 18 games? Because it sounds like it comes up every year.
Well, if we're going to get it done. It's going to happen. You know, I mean, we got a contract negotiation coming up. Hopefully we avoid a strike. But it's we're going to get to 18 games. These preseason games, as much as the coaches – want them, it's meaningless for the fans and it's meaningless for television. And so that's what drives the league. Television and fans drive the league. And so we sit around and nobody plays in the first game, nobody plays in the fourth game. Heck, we can't, you know, I mean, Lowe will laugh at this, but I remember a year when Danny Tomlinson under Marty Schottenheimer took the first carry of the season, 80 yards for a touchdown, put the ball in the end zone, went back to the sideline, didn't play another snap.
No question.
You know, so, I mean, those the stars are the stars. They drive this league. We can't have stars hurt in preseason. If it happens in an 18-game schedule, so be it. But maybe there's an extra bye week in there, you know, to kind of spread it out a little bit. But we're going to get to an 18-game schedule, and I understand player safety. But, look, let's expand the rosters. Let's dress all 53. You know, I mean, there's just ways to work around it, you know, so that if the numbers of injuries increase, that they have enough to be able to handle it and overcome it. But it's going to get to 18 games. It's going to be better for the fans. It's going to be interesting for the postseason. And I think that's just where it's going to go, whether it happens next year or wherever. I just think that it's you can write it down. It's going to happen.
if the players can collectively bargain this, what's the one piece they're going to want coming back if they give the league the extra concession of 18 games? If you were the head of the Players Association, what would be the one thing you would want back for the player side in this negotiation?
Well, I mean, the obvious thing is just guaranteed contracts. Now, you know, the owners are going to push back on that. But if the owner's going to make, you know, 12% more money on two more games, they're going to have more money to go around with. We're getting to guaranteed contracts gradually with just upfront money right now. But that would be the first negotiating point. Now, you can negotiate around that. But I would say that just on the back end, you know, whether it's severance pay or whether it's you know, the things that they could do for the players down the road, whether it's, you know, fully insure the players for life. I mean, I think there's a lot of bargaining chips out there that have been talked about.
Yeah, no question. I'm with you on that. Full insurance, make sure medically these guys are covered, and it's, you know, so they don't have to make sure these insurances can't kick them out after, you know, these guys get older. How, when you look at it, he's talking about two games that players would have to be out. How would that hurt, though? You know, because guys, you know, I know if I'm playing and they said, hey, you got to miss two games, forget that because I want your team to make the playoffs. So how would they get around that? Because they're saying two games the guys wouldn't be able to play in.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to stick well. I mean, I don't understand. Okay, well, the players play 16, but the team plays 18. And
right.
So guys are up and down. I mean, I think that's just, you know, that's counter to what competing is all about. Tom Brady is going to sit down. Because of this, I mean, either it's 18 games and, you know, everybody plays. I mean, it's a star-driven league. I mean, we pay to watch these stars play, and these guys make these plays that nobody in the world can make. You can't sit Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers down or, you know, pick a position. I'm just throwing quarterbacks. But, I mean, you can't sit these guys down. So it's either all in or, you know, I mean, I can't imagine working around that, saying, okay, players – are going to sit out two games. They're going to get, you know, I can't imagine that, being passed by the league. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Former NFL offensive lineman, check him out now as a terrific analyst for the NFL Network as well as Fox Sports. 95.7 The Game NFL insider Brian Baldinger with us here on 95.7 The Game. Baldy, as always, we appreciate the time and look forward to many more conversations with you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, guys. I look forward to it, man. Thanks a lot.
John Clayton, NFL insider, will join us at 9:30 on the Dial Pad guest line. I don't even know where to begin. He had a few things in there where I was taking notes, and before I could finish the note, the next thing came out. The Niners have to win 10 games, in his opinion, and he's convinced we're going to get to an 18-game season, which that's the first I think I've ever heard anyone that convinced we're going to an 18-game season. I leave the choice to you two gentlemen. Which one do you want to dissect first?
Let's go to the 10 wins, because I think that would have
Hold on. Does he agree with you?
Well, I was going to make my case on the 10 wins.
Beautiful.
Because the 18 games won't possibly happen for two more seasons. I mean, they might decide next year if they can collectively bargain before the deadline, but that's still a couple years away. This 10-win thing, it's fascinating to hear him lay that out there, and I don't think he's necessarily wrong. 10-6, I mean, another 4-12 year, you got real problems on your hands.
So we're going chronologically. I like it. We're going chronologically.
I think so.
I thought we were having a little something. Me and you were thinking about a little something. I think that was like 5 or 6. I think we were 7 or 6.
If you'd like me to refresh the conversation
please,
you and the audience, what you had said was, and you laid out a pretty eloquent scenario as you are wont to do, and you said that, you know, they could win between 5 and 11 games. And I thought
that's true too.
I thought that you would, you know, and
it's
I thought
window.
It was more likely that they would win 5 than they would win 11, which is why you seem fixated on the fact that I said that they would be 5 and 11. So basically the way it happened was you laid out this thing where, you know, you had them at 8 and 8 most likely, but they could either win 3 more than that or 3 less than that. And so that's where this whole thing has come from. So before you go ahead and tab me as the guy saying, oh, I thought that you said that they were only going to win 5 games, that's a little backstory for you and the audience.
I think it's quite
Yikes, the uptick there, too, can't feel good.
First of the week.
I think quite sure it was 7. Your number was 7, and I said that I'll take that over on that. I do believe this team is is winning. Eight is the absolute bare minimum. I'm still.
So you're an optimist, Dibs. You're a little bit more on the pessimistic side. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, I would go under eight. If eight was the actual number that was set by the experts, I would go under eight.
Okay,
absolutely.
And you are right around eight, but you like them more towards the over on that whole thing.
Yes, yes.
Help us with that. Why?
Well, I'm saying it because you just heard Dibs just come right back and correct me if I'm wrong. You just said, yeah, I can see that. And after Baldy got off, you're like, man, this is a situation where now you're starting to see maybe possibly 10. 10 would be a great number. But for sure, you made me say if I had to pick between eight or over, I would go over if I had to. Because
all right.
I just think when you look at where they're at, and especially if you look at the digression I think that we're going to see from L.A., I think L.A., they have a problem. Gurley, knee, arthritic knee, don't know what you're going to get out of him. Your quarterback showing you that if you make him try to win a game, take over a game, he's shown that maybe he can't. How much now did Belichick go ahead and solve that mystery, wait before you let defenses line up?
How valuable is that Super Bowl game tape going to be to the rest of the league when it comes to McVay? Explain what he did that exposed the Rams.
You were right on it, Joe. Here's a guy that said, nope, let's wait. Let's let them. They wanted to see New England Patriots set up their defense, and then McVay would call in the play according to the coverages that what they were in. New England Patriots said, no, no, no. We want to see if your quarterback can play.
Clock's on you, not us.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see if he's a really astute of the game. Does he know what to do with the ball if the coach isn't in his ear? So now that game tape, you're going to see defenses not get adjusted right away for the Rams, Dibs, and now you're going to put a ton of pressure on this quarterback. So we're going to see, has he matured? Because McVay can't be in his ear with 10 seconds left and say, this is where we're doing, this is where we're going. So now what's going to happen to the development of this young quarterback which he's so heavily dependent on his head coach?
Here's your Super Bowl box score. Jared Goff, 19 of 38. 229 yards, no touchdowns, an interception. He was sacked four times for 31 yards, quarterback rating of 57.9. And what you're saying is, and let me just take everyone through this because I'm pretty sure I've got it, what the Rams were doing, and we saw McVay on the sidelines with this, he was taking an element away from the college football game. The defense would line up, his offense would be lined up. From there, McVay would make the assessment, radio in or signal Goff with what he wanted him to do.
Yes.
Goff would take the information, and then he would go out and execute. We saw this in the Big 12 quite a bit. We still do this day. Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, West Virginia. You'll see it at, I believe, Houston with Dana Holgorsen.
You got all 11 guys on the offense basically staring at the sideline.
Right. Instead of huddling. You line up, and then you stop, and then all 11 guys turn, and they get the signal, and then they go because the defense is lined up because you're lined up. So you're saying the Patriots just simply said, clock's on you. We're not going to line up. So they would kind of muddle huddle. They'd be in their general vicinities, but the Rams needed to make a decision. They had to get lined up. And because Goff wasn't getting the advice from the sidelines, he wasn't able to make plays against the Patriots. And as a result, the Rams scored 3 points and Goff had an off night. So
absolutely,
this is what opposing defenses are going to do.
Right.
So Goff's going to have to take the next step, but the Rams aren't going to be able to win a lot of games next year.
Absolutely. And so when you look at, and that's why you look at the Niners, you're saying, okay, here's a system that Jimmy G has been in going on his third year, well, 2.5 years plus because he came in during the season. Now you look at what's going on with Arizona. They have a new coach and a new system and a new quarterback. So you look at Arizona, yeah, they're going to be somewhat better. Their running back hasn't shown me nothing since he got that huge contract. So you look at Arizona. That's a team that doesn't necessarily scare you, but they're going to probably be a little bit better. Seattle is the team that's just probably the team to beat, in my opinion. Seattle, you know they're going to run the ball. They're going to be physical. You got Russell Wilson. You got a guy that knows how to, you know, win ball games. So I think Seattle, in my opinion, now is the team to beat, not the Rams. So if you look at what's going on, I think that the Niners, you got to look at this team and say, man, they got better in the areas they needed to get better in. You needed to get better with pass rush. That was the first thing you did. You went out there and got better. You said you need to get better in the secondary. You at least went out and got some guys that have played and played on a high level. You got to look at what they did at receivers. You said, we got to get better in receiver position. What'd they do? They drafted high. They brought in other receivers, brought in some veteran receivers. So looks like this team at least address the needs that they needed.
They tried to, and I don't know if they necessarily did. And you want to talk about the secondary upgrade, and you brought in a guy who's been hurt the majority of the last 4 years. That really was your only significant piece. Other than that, you're bringing back a lot of the same guys who were unable to generate many turnovers. And I know that a good pass rush will help the back end tremendously, and you're really putting a lot of eggs in the basket of that front four. Additionally, Quan Alexander coming off a torn up knee, don't know how good he's going to be. You mentioned the receiving core. Jordan Matthews is your big free agent piece coming in, a guy who was not really sought after elsewhere. And other than that, you got a bunch of young receivers. So I look at the last six games of the season. You got the Packers at Baltimore, at New Orleans. Then you have a better Atlanta team, a Ram team you've struggled to beat. Then you go to Seattle. That last six games of the year is going to be very tough for this Niner season.
All that juicy stuff brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Big final hour coming up. NFL insider John Clayton at 9:30. In addition, the same name on the 49er roster has popped up in both interviews with our NFL insiders so far today. And they both really like this guy for the upcoming season. It's not Garoppolo. We'll get into that. The 18-game season. Do you think the Niners can win 10 games? 888-957-9570. Time to hear from the Billions. 888-957-9570. But first, since I blew it earlier, here's nice guy Stephen Langford with what's coming up on the game.
Thank you, Joe. And what's coming up on the game is brought to you by Cannon. The Giants get the series win over the weekend as they travel to Colorado for a four-game stint against the Rockies. Jeff Samardzija gets the start. Some football news. The 49ers and kicker Robbie Gould have officially agreed to a contract for 2 years worth $10.5 million, fully guaranteed. And NFL training camp is less than 2 weeks away. And this football season, 95.7 The Game is bringing you the biggest names, including Hall of Famers Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, and Michael Irvin, former 49ers head coach Steve Mariucci, NFL Network's Brian Baldinger, and more. You'll hear from all of our NFL insiders this week on 95.7 The Game. Brian Baldinger just joined us and gave us his thoughts on the win total the 49ers need to avoid disappointment.
The quarterback is the biggest part of it. This is a team that has to go out and win 10 games this year. And if they don't, regardless of what Garoppolo does, it's going to be a major disappointment. And, you know, heads will roll, as they like to say.
Now coming up, Jolo and Dibs are live on the stream for the final hour of the show. Find the link on Twitter at Jolo and Dibs or go to the front page of 957thegame.com. I'm Stephen Langford on the Bay Area's number one sports station. That's 957 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.